Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we've got Ewan Leith with us. Ewan is Head of Engineering at Reality Mine. Thanks for coming on the show, Ewan. Really looking forward to it.
Thanks, Ben. I'm happy to be here. Looking forward to it too.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. We've got an interesting conversation ahead of us here. But before we get into that, the main bulk of that, could you give us a bit of background on your career in technology?
Sure. So I started, 20 years ago now. I feel like an old man in technology now, 42. So I come from an operations background. So when I left university, I went into Unix administration on like IBM Power Servers, IBM RS6000 as they were then, working for like a small software company that did builders, merchants, and logistics software. It wasn't the cutting edge of technology by any means, but it was a really nice group of people. I stayed there for a few years and then eventually kind of worked out not much was going to happen there. I think they're still there. I think they're still selling the same software to the same companies. So longevity-wise, would have been great, but maybe wouldn't have been best for career development. So then I moved on to a place called Cold War Communications, which was part of like the Phone For You group, like the big phone retailer. And that was when like home broadband was really kicking off. There was like growing like mad. There was loads to do. There was permanently fires to fight. It was a fun environment. But what I didn't really realize when I started, because I think that's what I was looking for at the time, was that the actual environment was quite toxic. If you look back at it now with more experience, and you go, actually, this was quite a hostile place. And for someone like me who fitted in, who was young, who was, you know, willing to work for long hours, enjoyed it, was part of a really good team, felt great. But when you look back at it now with more experience, it's one of the more kind of educational things for me looking back is and reflecting on it. You go, actually, that's a place that I wouldn't want to lead today.
It's interesting that. Sorry to interrupt you. And it's interesting because often in hindsight, you become more aware of what the situation's like, especially as the years go on. I mean, you know, you talk about what businesses were like in the 90s and what common culture was like in the 90s, and it's completely changed. And at the time, I guess people were thinking this is like normal. This is normal for us. But when you look back in hindsight, as stuff's changed so much and stuff's developed so much and we've come quite far in this, it's really easy to see. Like, you know, you were saying it's hostile. It's really easy to see that in hindsight, isn't it? But at the time,
absolutely,
you just don't realize at all. It's very
when you're part of the group, you don't see that.
Yeah.
Or at least, well, certainly I didn't at the time.
Yeah, I just wonder what it's like if in, you know, 20 years' time we can look back at where we are now as a culture and think completely differently to how we see it now. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting to see what people make of like a, well, Zoom culture. And we'll start seeing it's a like big mental health impact of people not seeing each other. And
yeah,
I'm sure in 10 years' time, there will be really strong views on whether this was a good or bad thing.
Yeah, there will be. It's really interesting. I mean, we'll touch upon this later on in the show, but yeah, one of the points that I want to talk about is where we can see the dust settling with kind of remote working and all that kind of thing, because, you know, how long have we been kind of in since the pandemic? It's just over a year or a year and a half or
a year and a half now, isn't it?
I lose track of time, to be honest. And it'll be interesting to see if the people that love working remotely now, in 5 years' time, what their opinions are of remote working are. And it's not, I think like a year and a half or 2 years is not long enough to get a really good sense of how it actually will impact people and businesses.
Yeah, so I think it will be a long-term impact. Whether it's good or bad, it'll be the long-term before we really see what difference it makes.
So we just got a history of your background. Can you carry on with that? Sorry, I interrupted you quite abruptly.
That's all right. When Cold War was sold off, it was sold to TalkTalk. You know, the culture obviously changed. It became a much bigger company, much more corporate culture. So I moved on again. I did a bit of contracting for some time, saw lots of different interesting things. And then ended up at Betfred, a gambling company, where I was fortunate to work with some of the really good people from Cordwell, but in a much more, much better environment.
Mm.
So some of the people who'd moved on from Cordwell had gone there, but they created a much better, more positive environment there to work in.
Mm.
So I enjoyed that for a couple of years, but it was a long, long commute. They were up in Wigan and I live in South Manchester. So
Wow, yeah.
That doesn't mean much for most listeners, but it's a long trip each day to go up and down the road.
Yeah.
So I decided to look for something local, and a friend said, like, oh, you should come here. This place is great. It's really good fun. It's this place called Reality Mine. He's like, I've never heard of Reality Mine. What do they do? And the next day I was on the phone to the CTO, and the day after that I was in the office.
No way, really?
To say hello to people. And
wow.
Yeah, it was like, it was a really fast process. And yeah, I've been there ever since. So 7 years now I've been here.
Wow.
First as a data architect and now as head of engineering.
Oh, amazing. And also, could you give us a little bit of background on Reality Mine and just what it is as a service and all that jazz?
Also, Reality Mine, it's hard to describe. We do technology for market research companies that measure how people use the internet on mobile phones and desktops.
Okay.
So typically, a big, large market research firm might come to us and run a project to, but yeah, look at, they might want to study streaming data. They might want to look at like Netflix and Amazon Prime usage data. And they either pay or reward panelists to install our software on their phones. And then we can look at how they use the internet.
Mm.
And they build lots of analysis out of that. And we clean up the data and make it all very research ready. So that instead of it like just being masses of unstructured information, it's useful information that researchers can dig into and learn things from.
Amazing. Amazing. That's really interesting. And it seems like, you know, I've been doing my research a bit on Reality Mine. It seems like it's a very forward-thinking business. And, you know, how do you create an environment that spawns that kind of forward-thinking innovation? I mean, because all these developments essentially come from people, don't they, at the end of the day? So how do you create that environment?
I think there's two parts, or two big parts to it, certainly. One is that you need to build like an environment of trust and communication.
Yeah.
You need the different teams, different people to be able to speak to each other, trust each other, believe each other have got all good intentions, and encourage a kind of exploratory process. Certainly when we create a ticket to look at a problem, we're often trying to do something for the first time. We do a lot of things that no one else does or is rarely done. And if we create a ticket which says do X, we don't know if X is actually possible.
Yeah.
So if you phrase it as do X, you're setting the developer up for failure.
Mm-hmm.
So we try hard to make it learn about X. Tell us what we can do about X.
Yeah.
You know, some of the best tickets and results from these explorations are, you know, we looked at this. This wasn't possible.
Yeah.
But we found three other things that are possible that we can try next. And you have to let people know that failure is not going to be a problem. So I think that's the first big thing. And then the other thing is that if you just have that culture, but no impact, then you just end up building things for the sake of building. Doesn't really change anything. So what we're lucky with at Reality Mine is that a lot of our customers are really engaged with us. We have customers who stay with us for years and years. I think the very first customer of Reality Mine is still a customer.
Well, really?
10, 11 years on.
Yeah.
So these customers are really engaged with us, and we can get developers on our side to speak to their developers. We can get the project team regularly speak to their teams. And that really encourages, you know, when you learn about a customer problem, the customer doesn't have a solution. They just have a problem.
Yeah.
So if you have that high trust environment and that communication, and then give people interesting problems, which they know will have an impact, they can come up with some really creative solutions on how to fix it.
Mm. And is it always kind of the new innovations and, you know, the new directions you're going in, is it always to solve problems that have arisen, or is it just new exciting technology, or is it a bit of both?
A bit of both. I think the technology could enable it. And it's always great fun to see the new technology, and I'm a technologist, so it's brilliant to see. We've done stuff in the past, like we've done research into facial recognition and things like that. And you go, this is really interesting, but it doesn't solve a problem. So it doesn't stick. You know, it just becomes a tool that gets put in the back of the cupboard and then gets forgotten about.
I mean, it's very cool, but I don't know how many problems it'll solve.
But I think at the time there was a big trend, or maybe even a fad, of like billboards that would do facial recognition and go, there's a man who's 35 years old walking past. Show him a picture of a man wearing clothes that we want to sell to a 35-year-old man.
Right.
And that was a real thing, and it is a real piece of technology. But it didn't catch on, because I don't think it really solved a problem. So you can get really nice technology innovations as standalone things, but often it seems like if they don't actually fix a problem, maybe even a problem that you didn't know was there or fixable in advance, then it just doesn't last, and it gets put away and just gets forgotten about, really.
Yeah, I mean, what would you say is the biggest, what has been one of the main problems that you've solved then recently with technology, would you say?
I think there's always ongoing challenges around changes in technology and change. So we work in a space owned by Apple and Google. So every year, Google and Apple change everything. They'll release a whole new set of capabilities into the world with each iOS or Android version, and they'll close off old capabilities. And being in market research, what customers really want a lot of the time is for things to stay the same, because they want to be able to compare trends over long terms. So the challenge for us is often to go, we've lost the ability to do X. So a good example might be location. Location data, there was a problem where people were abusing location data. Computer games were, apps on your phone are like, everyone wants your location. And they don't want your location just for that app to function. They want it so that they can sell it en masse, anonymously, to everyone around the world for marketing reasons and all sorts of different things. And people don't really have control. They don't have consent. And with GDPR coming in, and Apple have been a lot more strict on privacy, location has gone away. So now it's no longer trivial, even if you have the panelist consent. So we're in a market research world where we pay people for their information, but there's a technical limit and you still can't do a lot of the things that you used to be able to do. So we look at things like how do you determine if someone is in home or out of home without knowing physically where they are? We don't really care where their house is, but we do want to know, is your behavior different when you're in the house to when you're out of the house? So those kind of challenges where we're going to the team, what's possible? What can we do? How do we apply technology to that problem? Can be really interesting and does solve a real problem for our customers.
Yeah. How do you know, there's so many new technologies coming out all the time, new frameworks and all that jazz. But how do you know what technology is worth your time and investment? I mean, there's so much out there these days.
I'm not sure you do know. I think there probably is quite a lot of waste, ineffective effort. Where you just have to trust people to let people learn it, see what's useful, and then move on if it's the wrong thing. I think we do spend a lot of time going, oh, what about this framework? What about that? Whether that be in like something in the operating system, or whether that be like the latest JavaScript frameworks. Whether you should be using Angular, React, Vue, Next, there are 1,000 JavaScript UI frameworks. You could spend all your life looking at them. For us, it's been a case of trust the people who are working on these problems to find the right solution and let them get on with it.
And also, we were mentioning that at Reality Mine, it's quite a forward-thinking business. And I just want to find out the innovation of the innovative culture of the business and how that was affected when teams were physically separated during the pandemic and remote working.
Yeah, I think at first within the first kind of, we were quite early to lockdown. You know, I think we were ahead of the government kind of lockdown. We'd always had a work from home culture available. People were always able to work from home if they wanted to, though everyone worked in the office to some extent. So when we first locked down and it felt like an emergency situation, people were willing to make do. You know, it was kind of almost like a bit of fun, a bit of an adventure. But as it dragged on, I think it did become somewhat of a challenge because people would kind of retreat to their Slack channels, to, you know, private rooms, and you're suddenly like, people aren't talking. People aren't collaborating in the same way as they were. And we've had to make a really conscious effort to make sure that different teams still talk to each other and different teams interact and mix with each other. And some of that has been silly games, fun games. You know, we've done things like Among Us and other stuff. Yeah. Let's get games going amongst companies to make sure people work. We've also done more conscious, kind of serious stuff, like trying to get people to do meetups and presentations on technology that's interesting to them. So we now do things every couple of weeks. Someone in the engineering team does a presentation on something. And it might be a project they've worked on at work. It might be something they found interesting outside of work. But again, it's not really about saying, here's a piece of technology you should use. It's about that person becoming known more to the rest of the company and everyone having a chance to kind of chat about it, talk about it, a focal point of, could we do this with it? Could we do that with it?
Yeah.
And encourage collaboration that way.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess without those kind of, those techniques that you were just mentioning, a business, when everyone's working remotely, can seem quite sporadic, and it kind of, if you're not really careful, it can kind of fall to pieces, or the wheels can kind of tend to fall off, and you lose interactions between team members and all that collaboration, and between different teams as well. And I think Slack is great, but it can't solve all the problems in the world. You know, there's stuff
exactly,
that there's a lot more things that need to be done, and like you were mentioning, consciously making these decisions. And I'd like to talk about your leadership style as well, Ewan, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Now, you've been in the industry for around 20 years, is that right, you mentioned?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then, during this time, and when you became a leader, how much has your leadership style changed from when you first went into that role, a leadership role?
I think it's changed quite a lot. And it probably comes back to that word conscious, actually. When I came into the leadership role from technology, so it was like, here's a project, Ewan, can you be the technical lead on this project? I think that's probably most technology people's first step into leadership is, can you be responsible for getting this thing done? There's a project manager over there, but they don't know how it works. They'll handle the dates for you, but you need to make sure the thing works. And at the time, you kind of centered on yourself and the project and going, right, I need to build this thing, and I need these two or three people to help me build it. And the people aren't important. As a technology person, when you start on these, you rarely think about the people, you're thinking about the project. And when I moved into the head of engineering role, or hopefully slightly before it, it became much more to me as like, the people are the important thing here. The project is short term. The project is, we'll get this thing done. It'll be in a month. It'll be 2 months, but I'll be working with these people, hopefully anyway, for years. And we'll do dozens of projects together. So I've become much more conscious about how do we interact as individuals? What does each person want out of a project? What does the person want long term? And trying to be much more conscious of how do we work together most effectively? So I do a lot of reading of, started doing a master's in business administration.
Wow.
For like my own internal kind of education on how these things work. A lot of it is just trying to learn more about people. And now I do very little technology stuff day to day. And it is about trying to help people, learn from people. How do you get the most out of people without, I guess the old style approach would be crack the whip, work harder or you're sacked. That's definitely not my style.
I genuinely find leadership fascinating. I really do, because, you know, before I started doing these podcasts and speaking to people like yourself, I didn't really think too much about leadership. And I only kind of experienced, you know, I've experienced bad leadership in other jobs. Hmm. And I find it really interesting that you can see bad leadership. It's so obvious and you can see it immediately. But
very true.
But then when you work at a place where there's good leadership, it's almost like invisible. Like, you can't really see it. There's a lot of thought that goes on behind good leadership to make it invisible, if that kind of makes sense, Ewan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's very true. I think I've worked at a lot of places with individual managers who are not great. And you look back and go, well, that's because they were micromanagers.
Yeah.
So the micromanagers out there just remove any trust.
Mm.
You feel like you're not trusted in the slightest. So why would you take a risk? Because that person's not going to trust you.
Yeah.
Or you get the leaders who disappear and you go, well, they're not going to take any responsibility if it goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to point the finger at you and say, well, I wasn't there. It was Ewan who did it. He's the developer. He wrote it.
Yeah.
I wasn't there. So you're right. When it works... Hopefully it just is there to build that trust and make sure everyone's confident that if something goes wrong, it's almost never the developer's fault.
Yeah.
It's almost never that individual's fault. It's almost certainly a process problem, a leadership problem. You know, I think we've seen recently some huge internet outages with Facebook. Broke down for several hours. And you could say that's an individual's fault. Someone applied the wrong configuration to a device. And if you're a bad leader, you will say that. Hopefully Facebook has got some good leaders in there.
Mm.
And they're going, no, the problem there was that there was some process that enabled that to happen.
Where do you learn about leadership then? Have you just learned by doing it? Or, you know, have you read leadership books, like sports players' books and things like that? Or
I do read a lot of leadership books. I read... both kind of sports books. I think there's some fascinating books on like Alex Ferguson as a leader.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the model you want to follow, but he's an absolutely fascinating person to understand how he got the most out of these footballers. Because, of course, these footballers are untouchable.
Yeah, yes, it's true. That's interesting.
So how do you as a manager get the most out of them? He's a really interesting person. There's also some... excellent software development books. More recently, I think in the last 3 or 4 years, people have been a lot more aware that software is hard.
Mm.
I think it's historically been looked at as almost like, well, you just do this process. So there's an excellent book called An Elegant Puzzle, which is really, really good on software development leadership in particular.
Mm.
And managing humans and so on are some really good books. And also I like to listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
And I listen to any kind of... interesting kind of leadershipy podcast. I'll give anything a few tries. I like that the really practical one called Manager Tools, and it's exactly what it says on the tin. It's practical advice on, like, how do you do a one-to-one? Well, here's how you could do a one-to-one.
Yeah.
And I love that for the simplicity of some podcasts tell you stories and you learn through the stories.
Yeah.
Some just tell you the facts, and that's one that tells you the facts and moves on. And there's not that many of them. So it's nice. Some days you just want to hear, I just need to fix this problem. What's an approach I could take to fix this problem?
What do you think of, you know, the tech leaders now that are in the public eye? There's a handful of them, you know, the big tech giants like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. And what do you think of those as leaders?
That's an interesting question. I think when you look at someone like Elon Musk, he's obviously massively charismatic, and he's not what we would traditionally have thought of as a technology leader, but he clearly is a massive technologist, you know, a futurologist maybe is the right kind of phrase for him. Somebody, you know, it feels like he sees into the future and then builds it. So from that side of things, obviously incredible person, but then you see the extremes of them. And I think that's probably true of Jeff Bezos as well. And I guess others like Bill Gates, these are people who have gone to extremes. And that's perhaps why they're successful. But when they go to the extremes, they do seem to forget about or put people second, and they put the project first. Maybe that's to some extent needed for their massive successes. But I don't think it's what I would want to be as a leader. And I'm sure we can do better as a kind of as a group.
Yeah. I had someone on the podcast a couple of weeks ago and they had a phrase which I thought was really interesting, and it was typical that I've just forgotten it. I haven't. It's if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go as a team, or something along those lines, but you get the picture. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, we were talking about bad management and bad leadership, and you can absolutely see when someone's in a management position for themselves, and you can also absolutely see when someone's in a management position for other people, and it's the latter that is the is obviously the better of the two. But would you say, I forgot what I was going to ask then. Would you agree with that statement? Let's just say that.
No, I think absolutely true. And I think that it's about whether something's a sprint or a marathon.
Yeah.
We did stuff at Codor Communications with a relatively small team, which worked really, really hard. And I have absolutely no doubt wouldn't have been done if I hadn't been so driven. Mm. But the cost, looking back, was too high. Me as a single guy at the time didn't really affect me. But I know that there was people there who got divorced, who had health issues, had, you know, real long-term challenges because of it. Mm. And those are people who, you know, suffered because of it. And that really was like essentially treated as a sprint, not a marathon.
Yeah.
You know, it was 2 or 3 years of very compressed work. And then it's done. It's gone. Mm. Job done. It's over. Mm. And I think you have to treat these things much more as a marathon. It's a long distance running of going, right, we're in this for the long haul. We want to start together as a team. We want to finish together as a team. Mm. And that means respecting people and bringing, you know, some days you have to help people along, and some days those people help you along.
Yeah. It's really nice to see that, you know, technology is very much a forward-thinking industry, really. Even in not just in terms of technology, in terms of, you know, diversity and inclusion and leadership and all that kind of thing as well. It's very forward-thinking, and it seems to be. I mean, I'm not sure about other industries, but I'd say, like, you know, if you think about sales or any other kind of industry that's not technology, I can't think of them right now.
Everything's technology now.
That's true, isn't it? Yeah. But you'd think that technology is probably one of the most forward-thinking industries in terms of diversity and inclusion and, you know, forward-thinking.
I think so. But there's so much more we can do as individuals and at companies. You know, there are some great people out there really pushing things forwards. On diversity and trying to force home that message. But maybe as an industry, we've been too slow to change.
Yeah.
But now I think it does feel like there is a bit of a groundswell of change, and we're starting to see more adverts with things like flexible working, part-time working, things like that, which are bound to help with diversity. Mm-hmm. And hopefully things will improve. I think they will do. But I think you're right that technology is probably forward facing, but we've still got a long way to go on it.
Yeah. But at least, you know, we're thinking about it. I think it's just going to take quite a bit more time. And also there was, just as a side thought, I mean, you know, I was on diversity. You know, there was a program on Netflix. I've forgotten what it's called. It's about this like developer or coder. I'm not giving you much to go off there, but do you know what? Maybe you've seen it. I can't even remember the guy's name. Oh, it's Rami Malek, who's the main guy in it.
Mr. Robot.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Mr. Robot. That's the one. Yeah. And I thought it was quite strange that in this day and age, the producers and directors or whatever, they've chosen to put the most stereotypical engineer as the coder. And would you not think, like, in fact, let's put a female in that position. Let's not put the stereotypical, you know, white male wearing a hoodie and headphones and stuff, like pasty white male. It's like, surely that would be a really good opportunity to show diversity. You're
probably right, yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it baffled me. I just thought, this is ridiculous. In 2021 or whenever, well, 2020 or whenever it was made.
But yes.
Hopefully in the future we'll start to see that kind behavior changing. But Ewan, just before we end the call, I've got a little bit of a game for you here. It's a little bit of a game. So as we've been talking, I've been jotting down a few words of what we've kind of spoken about. And so I'll say these words. It's kind of like a word play kind of like game. So if you give me your initial thoughts on these words, as I said, that'd be great.
Okay.
Okay, I'm just going to start. Quite an easy one. Reality mine.
It's a great place to work.
Excellent.
Really interesting place.
Good. Leadership.
It's about helping people do their best.
Well, you've done well there to put leadership into one sentence.
I don't know if it's right.
I'll decide if it's right or wrong at the end, okay? culture.
Actually, I think I've heard a great quote for culture, which I really believe is very true, which is like, culture is what happens when no one's looking.
Yes.
And I think that's really true for me. Culture's what happens when you think you can get away with something. When no one's watching, do you still do the right thing? If so, you've got the right culture.
Well, now that is interesting. And final one, diversity.
Massively important. Probably underappreciated.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Well, Ewan, I think that might wrap us up here today. It's been so interesting chatting to you. I've really, really enjoyed it, and you know, you've been great. So yeah, thank you for taking the time. I really mean that. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Thank you, Ben. It's been really interesting. I've really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.